Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, your host, Evan Sider. I'm joined by my co-host, Brendan Kleen. And we have a special guest for you guys today. We have Jeff Siegel, the head honcho over at earlybirdrights.com, one of your go-tos you should know about the salary cap. Jeff, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you guys?
Doing good. We're going to hit on just some various topics today. We're going to hit on general NBA stuff at the end, but mainly we're going to hit on the Suns. So, Brendan, I'm going to toss you your way first. What do you want to ask Jeff about the Suns?
Yeah, I mean, we're going to do a little bit of a trade deadline preview. Obviously, Jeff's site is a great place for kind of salary cap numbers and everything, but he's also an expert on kind of the whole NBA, writes in a lot of different places. So you guys should know him by now. I've had him on the show a few times. Let's start here, though. I want to talk about the deadline's now only two and a half, three weeks away. The Suns have obviously, since November 2017 when they traded Eric Bledsoe, probably something we've talked about with you every time you've been on the show, needing a point guard, and they still don't have one. There's rumors just about every couple weeks now of Dennis Smith Jr., Terry Rozier, Tyus Jones. We've heard about half the league's worth of names at this point, but I want to talk specifically about how their pursuit of a point guard affects kind of things going forward for them. We know signing Devin Booker to the extension last summer, max extension, kind of cut into their cap space for 2019 upcoming here, TJ Warren's deal, and then Ryan Anderson. Those are kind of the three big ones. But if you were in the Suns' shoes, how much would you value that cap space, that ability to go out and sign a player, knowing with so many players on one-year deals, Jeff, and most of the league at least having some wiggle room under the cap, the odds that the Suns can actually go be competitive this summer versus kind of acting quickly while they have some flexibility?
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing for Phoenix is that as much as it sort of seems like they should have a ton of cap space, they might not have any this summer. Like it's not unheard of. Like I have them at 20 million in max space, but that includes Kelly Oubre moving on to another team. If they keep him around, that's 9.6 million off their book, you know, on their books. And then they have their mid-level exception, their biannual, and all of a sudden you're out of room. So it's going to be interesting to see, you know, where they decide to go with things. Obviously they can make a move and that would change their long-term outlook. But for this summer, if they end up with the number two pick in the draft and they want to keep Kelly Oubre's cap hold on the books by issuing him a qualifying offer, that's it. They're out of cap space. There is no $18 million for Terry Rozier. There is no, you know, they would have enough room. You know, the mid-level exception might be enough for a guy like Tyus Jones, but they, you know, they're not going to be able to get into the high-end point guard market and, you know, in that circumstance. So, you know, I think from that perspective, if they have something on the table where they can act quickly and get a point guard in where they can then go over the cap to keep him, a guy like Rozier, a guy like Tyus Jones, that would make sense. Of course, then Dennis Smith is another name and he already has, you know, he's already under contract for next year. So they don't have to agree with him this summer on a raise. They can just, you know, keep him under contract. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know that, you know, it's not like Phoenix is sitting on a treasure trove of cap space. It's not like they have 30 million and they can even try to, you know, get in the Kemba Walker sweepstakes. I mean, they're not going to be in the big name sweepstakes. The only way that they really can get in there is if they do decide to move on from Oubre, they don't issue him that qualifying offer or they pull it in the first few days of July, then they can have about 20 million, which gets them into Rozier territory, I think, especially because, you know, he's not having the best year this year. You know, who knows what Boston's future, future salary situation is going to look like. So I think that's the interesting thing with Phoenix is that there's not as much cap space as it sort of seems like there should be.
That's really interesting. And I wanted to ask you this because I've been peddling this idea on the podcast for a little bit now since Memphis has been in a downward spiral. What do you think about the prospects of Memphis blowing it all up this at the trade deadline and thinking about a guy like Mike Conley? The Suns desperately need a point guard and maybe packaging their pick with a Ryan Anderson salary or something like that. Because like you mentioned there, it seems like if they do want to keep Kelly Oubre and Rashawn Holmes around, trade might be the best idea as far as flexibility goes.
Yeah, Conley's difficult to trade for because he just makes so much money. You know, it's not like you can trade Ryan Anderson and that be the only salary ballast to get Mike Conley, because Conley makes $30.5 million this year. So you're going to have to add in something else on that front. And so where, you know, what kind of mid-tier salary are they willing to part with? You know, is Memphis willing to take on like Dragan Bender? I think if you, you know, if you add in Bender and Anderson, now you're getting into to the right, the right number there. If are the Suns willing to part with Josh Jackson? Is Memphis interested in Jackson's sort of upward potential as a recent, you know, number four overall pick? So there, you know, I don't think that, the Conley for Anderson thing needs some work only because there's not enough money on Anderson's contract to make it work. Something that I think if Memphis is looking to blow it up, then Phoenix should be on the phone every day looking for a way to get Conley. But if they're not, and it doesn't really, you know, who knows exactly where Memphis is going at this point, but it's more likely in my mind that they decide to try to continue, keep the ball rolling in Memphis and try to continue to find a way to be competitive and a way to get off of future salary. I think that makes more sense for them. A trade of Ryan Anderson for Chandler Parsons works, and, you know, maybe Phoenix could pick up another asset in that sort of thing. I think that almost makes more sense than trying to, unless Memphis is willing to just totally blow their team up.
So with the names we've heard, obviously Dennis Smith is a pretty extremely different player than Tyus Jones, for instance, or, you know, we're mostly talking about young guys right now, because I think that's where Evan and I tend to lean. It makes much more sense for the future to get a guy that fits the timeline of the team, of course. But we've also heard names of veteran guys, you know, Patrick Beverley's been on Suns fans' radar. We haven't really heard much of a rumor as far as that goes, but there's a lot of depth at that position across the league, a lot of guys that could be had for the right price. I don't know, you know, I get the Suns aren't the hot ticket as far as watching them, but from what you've seen of the Suns, especially of Devin Booker, where would you lean, type of player, or if you have specific players and kind of constructing a deal that makes sense as far as guys that could be reasonably available here in a couple of weeks and that fit with this team going forward?
I mean, I think the biggest name that is sort of makes sense for them either at the deadline or over the summer, if they do have that cap space, is Rozier, like we've been talking about, because I'm a big Terry Rozier guy. I know, you know, he's a little bit polarizing because he.
Yeah, that's kind of surprising to hear, honestly.
I think he's miscast as a point guard. He is a 3-and-D point guard defender, but not a primary ball handler. So you see a lot of his mid-range jumpers. You see a lot of floaters and pick and roll. He's not a very good passer. He's not a very efficient scorer. But he can shoot very well. You know, he's a really solid catch and shoot guy, and he can defend the point guard spot. And so if you know, it's a weird combination of skills to have, because, you know, you think of a point guard as being able to do, you know, construct the offense on the offensive end and defend his position on the defensive end. He can do one of those things, but he's really not a primary ball handler offensively. But with the Suns, of course, they have Devin Booker. And if they look at him as the long-term point guard offensively, so to say, as the long-term primary ball handler, then a guy like Rozier makes perfect sense next to him as a guy who can shoot, play off the ball, and then defend point guards when Devin Booker can, you know, go defend twos or threes or whoever is the sort of least threatening offensive player on the opposing team. That's a situation that makes sense to me. I think that's where, you know, you'll see Rozier. You could look around the league and find a lot of places where Rozier is going to fit in that sort of circumstance, because we've seen more over the last few years, at least, we've seen a lot more primary ball handlers coming from different positions than just the point guard spot. You know, you look at Ben Simmons, you look at LeBron James, Giannis, you know, there are bigger players who are handling the ball for their team. And so you need to sort of pair somebody like that, a guy like Booker, who is not a one defensively, but is a one offensively, sort of. You need to pair him with somebody who can be a one defensively, but not a one offensively. And so that's where Rozier's skill set comes into mind for me. Whether they can get him at the deadline is improbable to me. I don't think that, depending on what they send back, but nothing that they're able to send back is going to help Boston, like, in the immediate term with their championship aspirations this year. And I think that Boston wants to stick it out with Rozier at least through the end of this year and see where he is in restricted free agency. Whether Phoenix wants to sort of go all in and use $18-20 million to try to get to nab him from Boston and see if Boston doesn't match, that would be, $20 million is a lot for Terry Rozier. Like, he's more of a $14, $15 million player, but in restricted free agency, you have to outbid the matching team here. So, you know, you have to sort of think that if you really want a guy, you're going to have to go big.
Yeah. So you think, I think that's the problem we've been running into, kind of trying to construct deals. A lot of the guys that are expendable around the league are on good teams. That's kind of why they're expendable. And so it's tough. The Suns just don't have a roster that, between buying out guys that might have helped good teams and trading them to, you know, Jared Dudley, guys like that, they just don't have any more of those players. But you think in the summer, just to kind of look ahead there, it would be $2 to $4 million more than what Marcus Smart's making, just to pry him away from Boston?
Just because he is restricted, because there's going to be lots of teams that have cap space and who can use him. I mean, even you look at Dallas, who has Dennis Smith Jr., but if they decide to move on from Dennis Smith, they're going to have a ton of cap space. Luka Doncic is their primary ball handler. You put Terry Rozier next to Luka. Rozier defends point guards and then shoots the ball on offense, and that's his role. And you can sort of, it's real. I mean, with Rozier, it's specific to his sort of mental makeup and the way he, you know, shoots. He likes to shoot the ball. He likes to have the ball in his hands. You'd have to get through to him and be like, that's not your role on this team. And Rick Carlisle probably can do that. I don't know whether Igor Kokoschkov can get that done. I mean, it's sort of early in his career to know how he's going to handle somebody like that. I think Carlisle can. I think there are other, you know, other teams around the association who can do that. You know, but it's going to take, because there's more cap space this summer and because he is restricted, it's going to take more than what it took to get Marcus Smart last year, just because of the way the market was last year. The market was so tight that Boston really could squeeze Smart in a way that they probably won't be able to do with Rozier. You know, if they come to him with $15 million over 4 years, he's going to be like, I can go to Dallas, I can go to Philly, I can go to the Lakers, I might be able to go to Phoenix. You know, there might be a few other teams that are interested in him, in his specific skill set, who think that they can sort of get through to him and make his role, you know, make his role what they want it to be. I think he can walk and try to find a $17, $18 million offer on the open market.
The way you frame that about Rozier is really interesting, because he has been linked multiple times by Phoenix and by James Jones. There was a report out there, I believe from Shams, in November, December, saying the Suns are still interested in him pretty heavily. If you were the Suns, would you be, if your primary target was Terry Rozier, the number one target by far, would you take the risk of waiting until restricted free agency, or would you roll the dice and get really aggressive here so you avoid that bidding war and get him at the deadline? But like you said, Jeff, who knows what the assets might be at that point? Probably the Suns' first round pick, but you, like you said, they'd be bidding against like 6-7 other teams at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're looking to trade for him, you need to either overwhelm Boston with future assets, which seems like not a great idea for Terry Rozier. Like, I like Terry Rozier, but it's not like he's a superstar guy who you should be able to, you should not be willing to trade the number two, number three overall pick in this draft, or, you know, the number two lottery odds in this draft for Terry Rozier, just because, like, he's not that level of player. I think he fits really well. I like what he can bring to the table. If he plays in his role, he can be very good in that role. There are obviously questions about whether he'll ever sort of get it mentally to play that specific role, and whether, you know, whether Phoenix is the place to get that done. I would not, you know, so if you're going to bowl Boston over with future assets, I wouldn't do that as Phoenix. And then it's about finding maybe players on the Phoenix Suns right now who can help Boston in the short term compete for a championship this season, more so than Terry Rozier can. And I don't see a ton of players on Phoenix who are actually, you know, actually literally on the market. I mean, of course, Devin Booker, but like, that's ridiculous. And, you know, a guy like Mikal Bridges, that makes no sense either. Ayton, of course, is off the board. TJ Warren makes too much money in a swap, but plus, and I don't think Warren makes sense for where Boston is going in particular. I like Warren a lot. I think he makes sense on this Suns team more than he would make sense for Boston, because of, you know, the position he plays and the sort of skill set he brings to the table. So, you know, in a trade, it doesn't really seem like Phoenix has the ammunition either in current talent on the roster that will help Boston win a championship, and their future picks are almost too valuable to trade for Terry Rozier, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think it definitely does. Before we move on anymore, we'll talk a little bit about the summer and kind of that Ryan Anderson contract, a few other things going on with the Suns and kind of how they need to look at not only February, but on into June and July. I want to tell you guys really quickly about Homey. It's our favorite new sponsor and the best way to save you money if you're looking to buy or sell a house in the new year. Not only does Homey have a team of realtors and agents to help you with every step of the process, they also, like I said, just save you a ton of money. Homey can sell any priced home for the same low cost of just $199 to list your house and $1,299 at close. That means that on average, Homey's going to save you over $10,000. Not only that, but you can qualify for a $5,000 buyer refund to help with closing costs. So if you go to Homey, they're going to help you every step of the way, and they're going to save you a ton of money in the process. If you're looking to buy or sell a house in 2019, there's really no better place to go. What we're going to do here at Locked On Suns to get you an even better deal, $100 off that listing fee to make it just $99 to list your house at Homey, is have you call this phone number. Not a promo code, not a coupon code this time. It's a phone number. Just give it a call and you'll get $100 off that listing fee. The phone number is 602-892-3335. Again, that's 602-892-3335 to list your house at Homey for just $99. All right, Jeff, I want to hit on this Anderson contract. His last year, 2019-20, he only is guaranteed for, if I remember right, $15.8 million. They agreed to that when they traded for him. That's Brandon Knight's cap hold for 2019-20, or a cap hit for that year to make it even, allow them to stretch that or move it a little more easily. What kind of use do you think that has? I mean, obviously, it can be used for matching purposes to go get somebody, like Evan brought up Mike Conley, but it could also be a thing where if they feel like they have a real chance at a free agent, maybe they attach a pick and get off of it. But where do you kind of see the value of having a deal like that and kind of what the Suns' options are using Anderson's cap hold or cap hit this summer?
Yeah, this summer would be an interesting time to move him. He would be worth $15 million in a trade. I think if you wanted to trade him for somebody who makes more money in 2019-20, it makes more sense to do that now before the deadline while he's making $20 million. And then you can just, that gives you more leverage, not more leverage, but a wider range of players that you can trade for with a $20 million player versus 15. So I think that I think for Phoenix right now, given that this season is not exactly competitive, so getting a point guard is not getting a point guard, a veteran point guard, is not necessarily helping you this year because that's not where they are at this point in the season. Moving Anderson for somebody who makes more than the $15 million in 2019-20, giving that team $10, $12 million in extra cap space, they could probably get an asset rather than attach an asset to Anderson to move him. You know, I think that would be my strategy if I were them, is try to trade Anderson now. His $20.4 million can bring back $25.6 million in salary. Yeah. Then you can bring in a first round pick with that. We talked about Chandler Parsons, I think, a minute ago, where you can construct a trade with Memphis where you go Anderson for Parsons. Memphis cuts Anderson in the summer, and that opens up $23 million in space for Memphis to use. Even with Gasol returning on that player option, Mike Conley at his $30+ million, they'd still have $23 million to go out and use. Is that worth a first round pick for Memphis in the future? Of course, Memphis owes their pick. They've got that complicated situation with Boston, but maybe that's worth a first round pick for them as they sort of, if they want to, really push with Conley and Gasol one last time, use that cap space and try to get somebody who can help them more than Parsons can. I think that would, the biggest thing with Anderson is that if you trade him now, then that opens, and the team cuts him for $5 million or even stretches him for $5 million a season, you can open up $20 million in cap space for another team. You look at a team, like Dallas, who is looking to be very active with their cap space this summer and is going to have a significant number of, a significant number of dollars to spend. If they trade Anderson for Harrison Barnes, that's another $10 million in space, $20 million if they decide to stretch Anderson. So there are a lot of guys around the league. Barnes, Parsons is the big one. Barnes probably not, just because I don't think that the the Dallas Mavericks need that much cap space. You know, they're already going to have $50 million. Do they really need $70 million? Like, there's at some point you get to have too much, and there's not enough players to spend it on who really want to come to Dallas. You know, a guy like Nick Batum in Charlotte for Ryan Anderson probably doesn't make a ton of sense, just because there's two extra years on Batum's contract. So that's $50 million in money coming back to Phoenix. Is Charlotte going to be willing to part with two first round picks and a second to get that, you know, to get that deal done? Plus, that makes their team worse for the Kemba Walker sweepstakes over the summer. Probably that doesn't seem like a great move, but he's sort of a guy in that salary band who makes sense for an Anderson trade. You know, then you look at a guy like Hassan Whiteside in Miami. That would be sort of the last one on my list of guys who might be traded for Anderson. This one seems to make the most sense only because Miami is in this luxury tax situation that they shouldn't want to be in. But of course, you know, who knows what their ownership is willing to pay. But if they want to, you know, get significantly under the tax, Whiteside for Anderson, then you cut Anderson, that saves you, you know, $10, $12 million. And you could even stretch him for another $10 million. So there are ways to get more flexible and use Anderson's partial guarantee for the summer. Use that now so that you trade him at that $20 million number rather than the 15.6 later.
Okay, Evan. So you and I heard James Jones talk about that they feel like the best way to go get a point guard is this summer. We know they want to win. I mean, I think this, what you're saying clearly makes all the sense in the world. It's just, it feels like when you hear this front office talk that they are miles away from thinking like this. They really feel like this core is going to get them there. We know this draft's a little bit weak. So, I mean, how likely do you think it is that we would even see a deal like that, Evan? I mean, it kind of feels like they view Anderson as a chip to upgrade the team somehow, or at the very least stretch him and try to spend some money. But it really just doesn't seem like they want to have any part in another lottery pick or two.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. I feel like the plan all along was to stretch Anderson at season's end because, like you said, it opens up so much flexibility for them. I mean, you pay $5.2 million for the next 3 years, but maybe you can get someone to trade for him, but I don't think maybe a trade with him makes the most sense right now, unless it's someone for like a Mike Conley with his salary with TJ Warren attached to it, maybe makes some sense, or maybe someone like Drew Holiday, but I don't see them blowing it up until Anthony Davis leaves. I think someone like that makes the most sense for a trade with Ryan Anderson and like some, like a pick and someone else. But I really think it's either stretching him or it's really going all in for a point guard this offseason pretty much.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the only other thing I want to hit as far as the summer goes would be just kind of picking your brain as far as Kelly Oubre and Rashawn Holmes go. Both of those guys have come to Phoenix this year and been huge parts of this team. When they do put good games together, it mostly flows through those guys, especially lately. So we can start with Oubre. I mean, I don't know how much you've seen from him, but he's just been on a tear, especially the past four or five games, scoring 20 a night and kind of taking over that six man role and playing more aggressively than I ever saw him do in Washington. So where do you feel like his number will land this summer, kind of in restricted free agency, knowing how coveted his position is?
Yeah, I think he's really interesting. He's somebody I really liked in Washington. I like what I've seen from him in Phoenix as well. The sort of the confidence that he plays with is really something that I like. I like guys who are aggressive and confident on the floor and are willing to take shots, especially for a guy like Oubre who's coming in off the bench and is willing to sort of, you know, maybe his field goal percentage could be better if he were a little bit more sort of judicious with his shot selection, but he's out there to get buckets. And if it's, you know, if that's what they would need from him on that backup unit, then, you know, he's doing what they're asking him to do. And I think that's, you know, something that might maybe hurt him a little bit just over the summer, just because that's a scorer type are less sort of valued around the league than some other sort of types of players, or certainly than other than scorers have been in the past. But Oubre, you know, brings something specific of value to this team, something that they, you know, didn't really have off the bench, something that isn't really, you know, isn't working for them throughout their team. So I think that, you know, where his number lands this summer, you know, of course it's very difficult to know with restricted free agents, just because there's such a wide gap between if they, you know, it only takes one other team to give him $14 million, $15 million. And all of a sudden Phoenix is like, oh, that's not, you know, that's a little much for a guy coming off the bench. But if Phoenix sort of puts it out there, like they are going to be willing to match on pretty much anything, then you see his market sort of dissipate, and all of a sudden he's down in the, you know, the TJ Warren type money, where he's at 10, 11, 12 million dollars a year, which makes a lot more sense for what he is. So, you know, it's hard to know what you know, where his restricted free agency is going to go, you know, how many teams are really interested in a guy like that. Of course, he does play a position of need throughout the league. You can never have enough wings, but is that going to be enough for a team, you know, to want to splash, you know, $14, $15, $16 million on him to make him sort of their starting three? You know, I wouldn't think so, but really it only takes one. So, and then Phoenix has a real decision to make. So they're hoping, I think, that he sort of strikes out in restricted free agency, and that they can bring him back at $10, $11, $12 million. But if it gets up into the $14, $15 million range, they're going to have a real, real difficult decision to make.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I wanted to pivot over to Rashawn Holmes really quickly as well, because his cap hold is $1.6 million, but he's playing like one of the better backup centers in the league over the past month or so, averaging really good numbers. What do you think about the possibility of keeping him around, especially if he gets like in a bloated marketplace close to $10 million a year?
Yeah, I mean, boy, if he got $10 million a year, I think you just wish him well and say, thank you, we appreciate you, but you know, go play for whichever team is willing to give you $10 million. I think even if he got $7 million, I'd be in that same mindset. Maybe I'm a little bit lower on him than you guys are. Of course, he's not going to be restricted this summer. So, you know, he's free to do whatever he wants in free agency. The low cap hold is really nice. I think they're going to keep that on their books, you know, pretty much no matter what they want to do this summer, until he decides, you know, one way or the other, whether he's going to leave or stay. But, you know, knowing that DeAndre Ayton is the future of the franchise means that there's not a whole lot of upward mobility for a guy like Holmes. It's not, you know, it's not likely that he's, you know, really going to have to take over a starting level spot at any point in the contract. So, you know, even if they bring him back on a bigger deal, on a longer deal, a 4-year, $24 million contract, he's still not going to, you know, probably step up and be the starter at any point on that contract. So you really are paying for a backup center with Holmes, and with how many big guys are around the league, and how sort of the supply of backup big men is just massive. So does it make sense to spend on a guy that, you know, and Holmes has some skills and is a solid backup center, but is not blowing your doors off as a backup center? He's not particularly good defensively. He's got, you know, he's good offensively, but not good defensively. Would you rather go in a different direction? You can go in a cheaper direction. I mean, we've seen, you know, once the team is sort of good again with Booker, with Ayton, with whoever they draft at the top of this draft, and if they can get somebody in free agency, you're going to see backup centers want to go to a place like that, where, you know, you see a guy like Brook Lopez, who is miles better than Rashawn Holmes, and is making $3.4 million. Of course, he was in a down market, and, you know, all the weirdness with what happened in LA before he moved to Milwaukee. But you can find backup centers for cheaper than, you know, $6-7 million, certainly $10 million. I think if he got into $10 million, it would just be, there would be no decision for me. If he got $6 or $7 million, maybe you stick around, just because he's somebody that you already know. You know what his skill set is. You know how to use him. But even at that level, you know, I would think that I would be willing to let him go and think that you can fill that spot with another player.
Yeah, I think we've been using the Montrezl Harrell contract as somewhat of a baseline. Obviously, that's a pretty good bargain for the Clippers this year, with how he's played, much better than Holmes even. But I think that's exactly six. I think if that's the number, I feel like the Suns do match it. I think they've loved what they've seen from him, bringing him in. I think, you know, not a lot of Suns fans were expecting them to make a deal for a backup center, and he ended up doing that, or they ended up doing that. He's been, I think, everything they could have hoped for, and plays within the system on both ends, I think, in a way that they really like. But we're going to end in the last segment here talking about some things to watch for the rest of the season, or the rest of the summer, around the league, how it could affect the Suns maybe a little bit as well. Before we do that, I want to tell you guys about the Locked On NBA show. You've heard me talk about it plenty now. I hope you guys have checked it out. Definitely go subscribe to that show. Fantastic Monday through Friday coverage of everything going on the night before in the NBA, in addition to analysis and news and all the big storylines that you need to be following, just like our show, about 30 minutes every morning, fit it into your daily routine and definitely go check out everything they have going on over at Locked On NBA. Subscribe to that show and give them the same love you give us. All right, Jeff, let's start, actually, you guys can each do it. I mean, let's just have some fun in this last segment. What's a deal that you're looking for forward to that you're kind of expecting to happen within the next few weeks? Some team that you feel like could really needs a move that you have a guy that could really help them. Well, we'll start with you, Jeff, and then Evan, you can go.
I mean, I'm really interested to see what Houston does. I think they're the most obvious need to upgrade candidate in terms of they're right on the cusp of being a great team. And so if they can make one more addition, especially on the wing, use Brandon Knight's contract and a first round pick or two to get off and bring in a wing, that's the one that I'm sort of looking at as the most. In terms of a team that's selling, I think Atlanta is the big one on that front. They've got Bazemore, Dwayne Dedman, and Jeremy Lin, you know, a point guard, a center, and a wing. Whatever people need, they've got it. So it's really something that where they can construct a lot of deals this summer, or they can sort of sit on those guys, play out the rest of the year, and then maybe trade Kent Bazemore over the summer and let Dedman and Lin walk in free agency. So those are the buyers. That's the big buyer and the big seller for me on this up until February 7th, at least.
For me, it's kind of the Kevin Love situation, because I don't know if he'll get traded or not, but it seems pretty obvious that they're going to try to trade him. At least Cleveland will. And I wonder who the buyers will be. I've been thinking in my head maybe someone like Charlotte, just because they seem like a playoff desperate team and they want to re-sign Kemba to a long-term deal. Why not trade like Jeremy Lamb, Marvin Williams, and a first-round pick for Kevin Love and just lock in Love and Kemba for 5 years? What do you, Brennan, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of teams I would love to have love. Yeah, that was funny. But I think it's just a real tough bet on that sizable, both in length and dollars, contract and his health situation. You just don't necessarily feel good paying or giving up anything for a guy like that and knowing you're going to have to pay him for that long. But I am going to be really interested to see. I mean, we'll see him, I think, a little bit before the deadline from what it sounds like, but especially this summer and on in next season by next February, because I love Kevin. Like, I really enjoy watching Kevin Love, so I want him on a good team again. But the one team that I'm interested in, and they don't, I mean, they've made some surprise deals, but I just, I'm really high on the Thunder. I like watching them play. I like the defense they've put together. I like that they find young guys that can play more than just about any other team, guys you wouldn't expect to contribute, just kind of the Thunder find a way to do it. So I'm interested to see if they do anything and kind of where they go. I feel like every year we say they need shooting and then they just kind of don't go get a shooter. And maybe that hurts them. Maybe I'm just completely wrong, but I've liked the idea. I think I overvalue Troy Daniels just because I watch him every night. I don't know how much the league's actually keeping an eye on that guy, but he would be fun, I think, on the Thunder. I know they have Abrines already who kind of fills that same role, but I think put a shooter on that team if they can find a way to get one. And even somebody that's only a shooter could be pretty interesting for them. But I guess we'll maybe close here on, I don't know. Well, I want to talk about buyout guys too, because I think Daniels and Crawford could be on that list. I mean, how do you think, Jeff, the trade deadline kind of changes with so many guys on 1 year deals and so many, you know, veterans on expiring contracts maybe, and just kind of how that market compares to the trade market this year?
Yeah, the buyout market's going to be interesting. It's going to be sort of, I think it might be a little bit slow only because everybody's waiting for the Robin Lopez shoe to drop. And if that one doesn't, if the Bulls sort of stick with him, and it's, you know, the last week in February and we're looking at the deadline of March 1st to add players to a playoff team and things sort of haven't moved yet, it's going to be really interesting to see sort of how that plays out, whether Lopez gets his buyout and goes to Golden State, what Golden State does if they don't get Lopez off the buyout market. You know, that's sort of the first shoe to drop on the buyout side. And then, you know, who of the smaller level players even get bought out, you know, whether it's a guy like Daniels and Jamal Crawford, or if Daniels maybe can go into a traded player exception in Oklahoma City, like you were talking about earlier. I think that makes sense. They've got a roster spot. they've got a big TPE from the Carmelo Anthony deal. He just fits right into that, and they'd still have like $7 million left over if they wanted to use that this summer. So that's a trade that does make sense to me, the one that you just brought up with Daniels to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, I would especially love that.
Yeah, especially with Daniels not really playing that much in Phoenix. So like, he would really help Oklahoma City. I think that would make sense. So, you know, that would be interesting. Where the buyout market goes after Robin Lopez sort of depends on who doesn't get traded, who wanted to be traded over these next couple of weeks. So, you know, if it's going back to Atlanta, if Jeremy Lin and Dwayne Dedman don't get traded, they're in the last year of their contracts, are they going to want out, or are they going to want to stick around till the end of the year and then go out on the market in the summer? So, you know, who doesn't get traded off of one of these bad teams and wants out is going to be the biggest thing, or it's going to be, you know, obviously that's where Robin Lopez sort of falls into it. Or we really might see just a couple of buyouts and then Lopez goes to the Warriors, and that's sort of the one big buyout move this summer or this spring ahead of the March 1 deadline.
Well, that is very interesting. I appreciate you coming on, Jeff. That'll do it for today's episode, guys. Appreciate you all listening in. We'll be back to you guys on Monday for the latest. But, Bernie, you wanted to add anything else before we close to them?
No, excited for the Suns to come back home. Actually, get to go to some games. They play Minnesota Tuesday, so we'll have something for you guys Monday, and then back to the regular routine, live episodes after the games and all that stuff, kind of move on from this road trip.
All right, thanks again for joining us, Jeff.